Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Good Sunday morning. Happy Valentine's Day 2021. Hope everybody's hearts are in the right place. Morning. And thinking about how great Sundays are anyway, for the most part, and then you add a little Valentine's Day on top of that. And then, if you're in the Northwest, or probably several other parts of the country, but since we're broadcasting from the Northwest, you may be lucky enough to have some snow on the ground. And I don't know about you, but I like snow. I mean, not necessarily every single day, not, all the time, but when it comes, and if things are kind of like, you know, you're in good shape, and for the most part, most of us, due to the pandemic, or thinking about, you know, what we're going to have for dinner, stocking up on supplies, of course, and absolutely sharing them and networking with people that are hungry close by. So snow, for me, it makes food taste better. And that's my daily excuse for today, February 14th, 2021. Eduardo, why do you eat everything that comes in front of you? I blame it on the snow. It's the snow's fault. Anyway, happy Sunday. Yesterday was World Radio Day. And for those of you who don't know about that, started about 10 years ago. They decided to form an incredible union between the idea of the going back in time to the little teeny crystal radio sets where they, you know, could broadcast in the middle of the night, tell you the weather in Missouri, or maybe you'd be lucky enough to hear an incredible sermon from a Southern minister on a simple little, I don't know, 1,000-watt radio station that somehow, through the magic of short waves and radio signals, was able to bounce around, and where it all suddenly made its way to the West Coast. Anyway, for those of you who are fascinated with radio, and you must like it to some degree because you're listening to it right now, so in most cases online. And, you know, it's a really, really wonderful thing. Radio is such a great friend on so many levels. We've learned some of the most incredibly uplifting things from radio, and we've heard things that kind of shook our world a little bit. There are so many incredible sources of information, keeping the politics out of it. No warnings here. Listen to everything. Make your own decisions. But what's an amazing thing about radio is that you develop friends, familiar voices that you listen to, and you might not even ever have seen their face or seen them in person. But perfect example for me would be somebody like Terry Gross from NPR, who I've listened to for pretty much as many years as she's been broadcasting. And, you know, I always zeroed in on the voice, and that voice via radio lets your brain sort of form a picture or an opinion of what somebody's spirit, what they might look like. And then, and that's the bookmark that's in your brain. That's why I love doing food on the radio, because we can describe different things over this little microphone through the airwaves, right, into wherever you might be in your workshop, or if you're in your house or your kitchen, or if you're in New York or Chicago, San Francisco, Hawaii, Tel Aviv. I could tell you about a donut, and you'll kind of know what I'm talking about. So that's one of the things I love about the Foodmania show. It's because most of the time we're talking about food, and we're talking about how to cook stuff and how to source materials to make beautiful things, and so many stories, people's recipes. That's my celebration and honoring of World Radio Day. And we'll dedicate our show today partially to that. And I want to say before anything, thank you for becoming a listener to the show and supporting it. And it's really, amazing to be able to throw out an idea and then get a response from somebody in most cases have never met. And I could share an experience that I had with somebody that way in a frying pan and hear how it worked out for you. So it makes me incredibly, incredibly happy. All right, so today we're going to have a good show today. We're going to talk about just an update of some of the things that are happening for most of you food workers out there and food service workers, and a little bit of optimistic news about a potential opening in about 4 days for 25% of a lot of different places. We'll talk about the CO2 ventilation requirement that some places are needing to do in order to safely operate. And we'll talk a little bit about some frustration from some owners and just see if we can iron out a couple of belly aches for some of you. Listen, nothing is easy. And especially with what's going on, we want to find the positive little trails and the happy little roads to keep all of us going and keep our friends going. You know, if we're doing good, the people around us are going to have a chance to do good. People we care about will do good. And that spreads. You know, goodness and being optimistic and positive, even in hard times, is addicting. And people need it. We all need it right now. We all need to bounce that off each other. All righty, so we're basically segueing into a song I just felt like playing today because of some of the great little emails that I've gotten over the last couple of days from you listeners. And you remember several months ago during the pandemic in the early stages, this was another one of the songs, just like the Hollies song, Look Through Any Window. We talked about that and the story behind that. And this one as well is just, it's classic. It's middle of the road in the sense that it affects everybody on both sides of the street. It's just a little beautiful thought. And we lost this great artist this year, Bill Withers. Anyway, let's take a little moment, get a cup of tea, or in my case, cup of espresso and water, and I'll see you in a couple of minutes.
Sometimes there, brother, when you need a hand. We all need somebody to lean on. I just might have a problem that you'll understand. We all need somebody to lean on. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. You just call on me, brother. To lean on. I just might have a problem that you'll understand. We all need somebody to lean on. If there is a load you have to bear that you can't carry, I'm right up the road. I'll share your load if you just call me. If you need a friend,
to make that point. It's that abrupt ending of a phone call or that text that you forgot to send or the email you didn't respond to. So, point being, don't take it for granted. Take 2 minutes and communicate with people who are trying to communicate with you. And say hi. See how they're doing. All righty. A snowy kind of day here in the Northwest. It's still piddling out there a little bit. No problem. We're happy to see it. All right. So Northwest News is coming up. All right, all kinds of things going on in our neck of the woods, and specifically some food-related news right now. So it looks like we're going to have a slight reopening on about the 18th, what they say. And that means that certain restaurants will be able to keep operating with their takeout and delivery service, but also expand their dining room to 25% capacity. Still while following all the necessary rules of that. And in some cases, it'll have a lot to do with the ventilation. It'll have a lot to do with the CO2 levels in the dining room and just taking real precautions with distance and masks, separating tables, a minimum of 6 feet. Now they're looking at more like 10 feet. Single households in most cases, but only up to 5 people at a table. They're trying to get it up one more. So we don't know. We don't know how it's all going to work out yet. And it's day by day. So check with the local places that you're wanting to attend and patronize. And that would be a phone call or a text away to see what their capacity is going to be and see how they're going to be doing their thing. There. Now, as far as workers are concerned, people who are possibly going back to work part-time, you probably, hopefully, have received some kind of notification from your employer. It doesn't hurt to check, depending on your present situation. So those numbers, unfortunately, are not going to grow real high right now. So hopefully people are filing their unemployment and getting the assistance that they need in the interim period of time before hopefully more and more places open up and we go back to work. And it's not an easy thing on a daily basis. It's just not. Because this pandemic and just what's going on with it is getting a little bit better in some cases, meaning cases are developing slower, meaning they're negative tests, and there's a vaccination program in progress. It always seems like a lot of hope, and it should be. But when it's connected to the jobs and getting back to work, and most of our food service workers that listen to this broadcast know that there are lots of options when things are better. There'll be even more. And what I mean by the options is things that we've talked about in the other shows, being able to see where you could be of assistance and help to other people that are in need if you're fortunate enough to be a little bit more secure. People are paying things forward. Like, for instance, if you're in a position, you can actually prepay a meal or two from local restaurants to pay it forward and have the restaurant be able to offer that meal to some people who are in need. It's an interesting system, the pay forward system. You can't really advertise the fact that such and such restaurant has 10 free meals to the first people that get there. It's more of the restaurants and the places that do business locally kind of know their customers. They know even some of their regular customers that might be more in need right now who they're not seeing, number one, because the restaurants aren't technically open, and number two, because people can't afford necessarily to get takeout every day. But they do have a list of people. I could tell you about a dozen people right now that I know that would benefit from some of that assistance. And I'm sure most of you guys and girls know that. So the pay it forward system is neat. You just go to, you know, one of the pizza places, buy a couple of medium or large pizzas prepaid, and let the business be able to, in the right circumstances, offer that to a customer who may be in need. It's a little teeny thing, but it really helps. And you can do that right from the comfort of your house if you're quarantining or if you're stuck at home. And it will help a lot of people. The boxes are scattered around your neighborhoods. The ones that look like the newspaper boxes have been converted into food boxes and dry good boxes. And I peruse the area. There's a couple of them very close to where I am, and they're constantly being filled by not just one person. It's interesting that finding that there are complete other people who have nothing to technically do with putting this box where it is, who have heeded the call and are bringing dry goods and different food there, and there's a flow going on. So we're definitely taking care of some people one way or another, and especially when the weather gets cold like this, and it gets harder and harder for people too, especially if you're living in your camper or in your car in a lot of cases, or even in your tent in a friend's backyard. So all that stuff helps, and it just gets, you know, to the point where people could, you know, really, really feel like, I want to do something. I want to do something. Well, it's something that you can do. And Foodomania supports it all the way. If you have any information that would be helpful to other people and listeners, let me tell you this. You can write me and send it to Chef Stuarto at C-H-E-F as in Frank, S as in Sam, T-U-A-R-T-O at hotmail.com. Now, also, the chat line is open on this radio broadcast, so if you're listening to it on the player on your smartphone or computer, you can punch the little chat button, and you can join a conversation if you'd like to, and also post some information there as well. I wanted to let you know that we have a very special guest who is coming on in a little while on this broadcast. Her name is Chef Jennifer Marie Sheehan, and she's a remarkable chef. has some great stories to tell. If you're looking on the player right now, I put up a few slides of her and some of her beautiful items that she cooks, which is just nothing, as you know, I always say, a drop in the bucket. She'll give you some information on how to reach her or learn more about her history and see some of the beautiful food that she creates. And we'll be talking to her in person in just a little while. She'll be part of the second part of the show. So we look forward to hearing her soon. Okay. Thank you very much for listening to this show. And we'll just be back in just a couple of minutes. And we got to do that type, you know, part of the morning where we got to do a little bit of shaking. We got a little, you know, music to help you do that. We can get up and, you know, get the blood going a little bit, get excited about what you're going to cook today. I want to tell you what I'm thinking about making, and I want to hear from you guys and girls and see what you might be making. So let's let little Richard segue into the next part of the show. Blood's going now. All right, just looking here. It looks like I've got a couple of texts, a couple of messages, and it looks like this. Some restaurants are actually, today is the official day, according to this, what I just got. As of today, 7 different regions in the state are going to be at phase 2. And that's about 92%, believe it or not, of the state's population. So a lot of areas are doing that. So it's, you know, Skagit, Whatcom, Island, and San Juan counties. Have fell like by 32% in the 14 days from January 17th to the end of January, which is what the numbers are for possible reopening of certain places. So again, I would say absolutely check with any place that you might be interested in going to. Just give them a call and see if they're serving. And I say do that because it is Valentine's Day and most people have already made their plans. But if you got a last minute urge to have something delicious, then you don't feel like making it yourself, go ahead. And all right. So I was thinking today, I had a bunch of dough that I was proofing. I'm always proofing dough around here. And what ends up happening is that, you know, experimenting with different kinds of flour. Love doing that. And hoping that, you know, I can share some of those really cool recipes with you all, which is my favorite thing to do. I took a few minutes to just refresh my brain with a little bit of bagel baking. And I've made them several times in the past. And my method is to make a standard sort of bagel dough, which would be just flour, some yeast, a little bit of salt. I put a little bit of vegetable oil in my bagel dough, and I actually add about a tablespoon and a half of honey. And in that case, I really like the idea of, proofing it. And what I mean by that is the proof situation is just, of course, letting it rise. And it takes a couple of different ways of doing it, but generally, probably out in the room temperature for about 7 or 8 hours, and then into the fridge overnight, and then I pull it out again the next day and do another 8 hours. And by the end of the day, I'm ready to use it. So the bagels, so many different ways. Generally speaking, if the dough is at the right temperature, which would be room temperature, it's a little less than perfect bagel material. So in other words, you touch it, it's soft but not sticky, and it feels like a little, you just touch it, you know what I'm talking about. And in most cases, what I do is I use about 3 ounces of dough per bagel. And so initially I'll just make my little 3 ounce balls and get them ready and just roll them around, let them sit a little bit more. And then on just the light flour surface, I'm going to turn them into the shape of a bagel. Now, boil water is an old method. And basically what you're doing is you're taking the dough, you're going to boil it until it kind of comes to the top. And then you have to have your oven sort of all ready to go. What I like to do is just pull them out, lay them on the rack that you're going to bake them in, let them, they'll drain a little bit. And of course, when you pull them out of the water, use a whole perforated flat ladle so you can get under it and lift it up. On your baking sheet, as you get the 10 bagels or so out of the water, go ahead and brush them with a little bit of egg wash. Now, at this point in time, I'm thinking time is important. I like to keep go fairly quick because, I don't know, in my experience, that bagels at home, they come out and they're a little plumpy when they come out of the water, and then they just kind of settle down quickly. So I like to try to get them covered with the egg wash, maybe some sesame seeds, some rock salt, some poppy seeds, an onion, garlic, kind of dried, dehydrated onion, garlic, sort of mix it, whatever your fancy is, and get them in that oven. And they'll be, I like to cook them, if I'm doing wood fire, it's a whole other thing. We'll talk about that later. But in a regular oven, I like 425 degrees minimum in there. And they'll be coming out beautiful. Now, once you get them in there and they start puffing up a little bit, I'd pull them out and give them another quick brush of the egg wash, and then just a resprinkle of some of your ingredients. You don't have to do that. It's something I like to do. And then basically you're going to see they're going to turn golden brown. All right. While they're cooking in the last phase, get your cream cheese, slice some red onion really thin, get a couple of, pieces of beautiful lox, smoked salmon ready to go, a little bit of capers and a little teeny wedge of lemon, that puffy cream cheese, you can add a few chopped scallions to it, and get ready to smear that bagel up with that cream cheese, put your rest of those ingredients on top, and take a big darn bite while it's still warm in your mouth. All right? That's what I'm making today, or if not today, tomorrow. I got the dough. And you guys and girls want the dough recipe, it's on the Foodomania Facebook page. And if you need it and can't find it, just text or email me, chefstruardo@hotmail.com, and I'll get you the link. All right, as promised, we're going to take a 2-second break, and then we're going to be back with Chef Jennifer Marie Sheehan, who is calling in and from her kitchen. We'll find out if she's cooking anything interesting today, and I bet you she is. So stand by. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. All right, welcome back to Theta Mania. It's just Eduardo. If you're just tuning in, thank you for tuning in on this happy Valentine's Sunday day with snow in the air and wind in your hair. And hopefully your cupboards are not too bare. Isn't that poetry? I don't know. All right, let's see. Let's bring her on. I'd like to welcome to our show Chef Jennifer. Hello, Jennifer.
Hey, Stuarto.
All right.
How are you?
Hey, good. Welcome to the show. How are you doing on this the snowy Sunday?
I'm doing well. Staying warm. So, got the hot chocolate going. Yep.
All right. Well, thank you for being able to join us today. I was just giving just a little description of you, but not in real detail. I know that some of your specialties are, there's so many different ones, and your baking is incredible, and your designing of those incredible little treats is fantastic. But for our listeners that might not know as much about you as some of us do, why don't you tell us just a little bit? I don't know. Just tell us a little bit about Where you came from, where you are, and where you going?
Well, I started cooking when I was very young, and after I finished high school, I decided to, in Illinois, I was living in Illinois at the time, and after I finished high school there, I went to the college to complete my formal culinary arts training to actually become a chef and own my own business one day. So I pursued that curriculum in the culinary arts and food service management, graduated from College of DuPage, and then I moved to Washington, and I just had a really great experience in college. I was trained both in the back of the restaurant and the front of the house as well, so I could do both.
Uh-huh.
And I've been able to pursue that here in Washington State. And I've been living in the Skagit Valley, really passionate about the farm-to-table, eat local.
So I have a question for you. So, like, when you before you actually came to the Northwest, were you familiar with some of the things that were happening in the Northwest, like Tom Douglas and the different, I know you knew of Alice Waters and Berkeley and all that. And when you decided to make the trek out here to the Northwest, had you had any idea of the food things that people were starting to do, the kind of modernization of the old, like there's a restaurant in Olympia, which is a perfect example, a seafood restaurant that's been there from the 30s. And if you go there today, if you went there 20 years ago, nothing's changed. It's exactly the same. Very rare place. But in that, so many restaurants in the time that, that even before you came out, were starting to develop a taste. Is there anything that you can remember before you came out here that maybe made you get curious about coming out this way?
Not as it related to food. I did. I was fortunate enough to come across a, being in the culinary world, you do hear about what different chefs are doing and where they're doing it, so that, that's always a constant. But I was also fortunate enough to come across a book in the mid 90s called Home Food, and it was 44 Great American Chefs cook 160 recipes on their night off. So I mean, it really covered a lot of chefs in international, nationwide, some in Hawaii, and so I really got a really nice flavor for what they were doing.
So when you came out here, did you have a a time of surprise? In other words, when you finally moved and you settled in and you were here in the Northwest, it must have been really kind of eye-opening in different ways to take everything you've known up to that point and then marry it with some of the things that people were doing at that time that you came.
It was. It was from having worked in Chicago with a really thriving culinary scene, coming to Washington, it was still up and coming. So there was so much room for opportunity and growth that really afforded a lot of creativity in what you wanted to pursue and how you wanted to pursue it.
So tell us about some of your first early working experiences in the state.
I was really involved in Asian cuisine, believe it or not. But,
oh, nice Irish girl
still,
from Chicago.
I still am in
Makes
love
sense.
With it. What?
I said a nice Irish girl from Chicago. It totally makes sense.
Right.
Right.
So,
and so
I, yeah.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I had my my friend and I, my culinary friend and I, we would have our cooking or food adventures in Chicago, and one of them was sushi. And then I came out here to the Pacific Northwest, and there was just there's different niches of ethnic cuisines I found. So it was the Asian cuisine. We had a lot more options here. So I really got to explore that and the different markets available and ingredients. So it was a lot of fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can imagine. You know, it's so amazing. When I moved from the East Coast many, many years ago, there were virtually no Mexican restaurants for the most part. There was certain styles of restaurants that were on the East Coast. And it was such an amazing thing to come out and learn. And I really honestly didn't really know too much about it. I don't think I even had any standard or traditional Mexican dishes when I came out west over the many years. Of course, it was the culture. Now, if you go back there, there's hundreds of incredible taquerias and Mexican restaurants. And I imagine Chicago is the same mm-hmm. thing, probably, except for maybe the last 20 years, where you'd see a lot more Vietnamese and a lot more Thai, a lot more, of that style restaurants and that cuisine. So it must have been
absolutely.
You were sort of caught in the middle of the vortex. You went from kind of knowing a little bit to that, wow, you know.
Right,
and, you know,
right.
All you have to do is somebody blindfolded you and dropped you in the International District in Seattle for the first time and took the blindfold out and said, go. And you'd have 15 square blocks of unlimited resources and things that you can only dream of, you know. And
right.
That's why I always say whenever you're going to go discover a new food area, diet, don't eat any food for a day and a half, you know, so by the time you do get the discovery going, you can eat everything in sight.
Right. Try it all.
Okay. So moving forward, over the last couple of years, I know that you have done a couple of different things and worked in different circumstances. What can you tell us about your experiences pretty much, I would say, pre-pandemic into the when the pandemic hit, and how were you affected by that?
Pre-pandemic? It was.
Yeah, take a little bit of time before, like a year or so before the pandemic, which I understand you were working in a restaurant for a while doing some new things, and then all of a sudden the pandemic hit. And so if you can make
right.
a little bridge between those two
right.
time frames to let our
right.
listeners know what your experience was, it'd be great.
Sure. I was really building a network of local relationships with the farmers, the food systems. One of the colleges here has a program that supports local farmers and food banks. And so I was really building my network to get involved and volunteer and to support the farmers and the farmland and quite possibly give, we have something called talking fields out here. So I was looking forward to
right.
leading tours like that. And you know, talk to people about what
sure.
what is in the valley and what we offer. And then the pandemic hit, and you know, business at the restaurant slowed down, and so we couldn't engage in those relationships the same way. But so I have been working to create a lot of different things while I've been home, and just experiment with different flavors and dishes and what have you. And
yeah, you've been
you
creating
were talking,
classes for yourself. You've
yeah,
been doing your daily
yeah. I was able to work with you on the Zoom class and the middle school students, and
that was
a lot of fun. Yep. So I look forward to doing more of that.
Yeah, I was gonna tell our listeners that was a great experience. More and more of that is happening, and so how you're marrying that now into a change in career, well, a change, you know, changing what your current thing is going to do, and so by using your time to be able to create, you know, different dishes and stuff, and participate and understanding, and trying and succeeding at teaching via Zoom or instructing complete strangers. I know I'm very hooked on it, and I've been really working on a virtual cooking class concept that to extend it to the kids through the pandemic, you know, through the continuation. Even there are certain kids and with their parents that are really interested in learning that way. But I mean, once things subside and hopefully there's more potential possibility of getting away from the, you know, the eyesight camera on our laptops. What are your hopes for the near future? What are you working on, hoping to do?
I would still very much like to teach. So whether that's in Zoom or in person, is open.
Nice.
And I would like to do more farm-to-table events, you know, bring people together and really nourish and nurture those relationships at the table and start
right.
those conversations about food and farmers and get people connected with each other and with the land, what they're eating.
Well,
yeah,
one of the great ways
I
to do
that,
that right
beautiful.
Now is to incorporate, start doing that now, start doing that soon, create a town hall meeting. And the people that you were talking to pre, you know, pandemic, and starting to put these pieces together to research and see if they'd be interested in participating in a Zoom, you know, Zoom discussion and meeting. And I'm encouraging, like the classes, when we do the food classes, a lot of the kids are in their kitchens at home, and a small percentage mm-hmm. of people are actually cooking along with the class. And then in the cooking segments, we're using a multiple camera idea to be able to have a master view of your kitchen, and also we've been able to get close to the food, so people have been really being able to see physically what you're doing. And I think your idea and what your new prospect is, which sounds really exciting. Hopefully, I'd love to see some of those meetings start taking place soon that we can all participate in and get the dialogue going, so we can get really primed and ready for when the day
yeah.
of the
curtain
lifts,
and it's really
and
fun
we can get
because
out there.
People, yeah, it's fun to watch people get inspired, and then they inspire each other, and I know I leave inspired, you know, so it's just a great energy that really comes from events like that, so a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Well, and what can you offer, you know, thought-wise or advice-wise to other cooks and wait people and people in the food service business that are, you know, home right now, not working? How can they somehow get involved to participate in some of these things to, number one, keep their chops up? That's such a great pun, but keep their chops up in the sense they always use it when you apply it to music, but when you're applying it to cooking, it really makes sense, you know? And so, but how can people stay in shape? In other words, I know a regular exercise routine of some kind physically is important. How can people participate now in some of the things that you're talking about, and can you express just a couple of ideas how people could get started, maybe based on your own experiences?
Well, what I've seen is social media just playing a really big role. If it's been COVID, that's been a factor, is that a lot of people are doing, what's the word I'm looking for? Just they're like live streaming events. So whether you have
telecommunications.
Correct. So if you're live streaming, you can still participate in events. Let's say, and that goes from everything from a celebratory dinner, or if you and your chef friends are in the neighborhood or in other states, you can all get together and,
absolutely,
you know, form a social network to support each other, even share recipes.
Yeah.
If you're not hosting the classes or providing a class, you can still get together and make it a social and educational experience, you know, to stay up and share and grow in what you want to do and build a community,
right, so
that wants to support you.
Great. Well, that's a great suggestion. So basically people who are not familiar that these things exist. I mean, yeah, if you've been home, you know, and you're in our field, and you've been home, you're definitely watching some cooking videos. You're hearing about some of these things. But the difference is hearing about it and participating in it, which is basically maybe subscribing to some of these recipe channels. And it's amazing because there's we're not talking about just people you know, the chefs and restaurateurs that are famous. There are so many people you'll never probably have ever had enough time to meet that are now appearing, like you said, Jennifer, on social media. And we can all participate in all that stuff. It really makes it fun. I'm looking forward to some progressive dinners that some people are doing where they're creating a theme and they're going to just make that one dish, but it's going to be a progressive dinner to be able to share with other people so they can watch basically 15 different, you know, households sharing in a 7-course meal at the same time,
right,
while actually eating in real time. And I think it's just an incredible, it's an interesting way of socializing now. And I know it's better than nothing in a sense. In other words, it's better than doing it all by yourself. It's really fun to do that. And the idea of tagging your pictures, and I've seen that people doing when they're putting them on their posting sites and giving a little contact information that, you know, just in the same way, like asking people to send you a message or chat and suggest an idea or share a recipe and just keep passing it on. It's really, really great. So
mm-hmm.
I'm thanking you for thank you for sharing those thoughts and information. What else? Before we got about another 6 or 7 minutes. What else is something that's been on your mind as far as food and things like that? What else can you share in closing thoughts for your guest first appearance on Foodomania, which I hope will be one of many in the future?
on food, my goodness.
It's your table.
Well,
you can cook whatever you want right now.
I you were talking about cooking earlier.
Right.
What?
Yeah, what's on your table
I have
today?
Thai hot and sour miso soup with shrimp.
Oh, nice.
Today.
Oh,
so,
it's a perfect day for it.
So, absolutely. It's a good day for soup.
All right. So before
hot.
I let you go, give us the description of exactly what you just prepared in your kitchen here, this hot and sour Thai soup.
Oh, it's built on a chicken stock, white miso, enoki mushrooms, leeks, ginger, kefir lime leaves, some lemongrass, and there's a, that's pretty much the base of it. There's a garnish of like bell peppers and cilantro, and then I just put fresh shrimp in there, and it has a lot of flavor. It's really delicious. And you can make shrimp dumplings or just use regular prawns if you want, so...
what's the basis of your broth on that again?
There's a chicken stock and white miso.
Okay. And for people who don't understand.
Yeah, you can use red or white miso.
Okay. So people who don't understand what miso is, which we have a lot of listeners that don't, do you mind explaining it?
Oh, it's a fermented soy. It's a traditional Japanese seasoning produced by fermenting soybeans with salt and sometimes rice or seaweed or some other ingredients. So.
And so when you have a bowl, when you're making a pot of soup, like say you're making 2 quarts of soup, how much of that miso would actually go in your chicken broth?
The miso. This recipe is like a quarter cup of miso for 6 cups of chicken stock, if that gives you an idea.
Okay, that's what we need, just a general idea what the ratio is. Great. All right, cool. It sounds like it sounds like a delicious soup for sure. And
I would tell anybody, any students, you were thinking about food, if anybody, like a lot of other chefs have downtime too, so a lot of people are available to chat. So I would say now has been a really good time to really get to know other chefs in the industry. They have a lot of their time and knowledge that they're willing to share. So I would encourage people to reach out to other chefs or aspiring chefs to reach out to chefs
that sounds great. You know what it'd be, I can ask. Yeah, if you don't mind, at some point in time, if you forward some links to some places where people might just be able to go to and send it off to me, and then I can post it on Food Mania, and people who are listening to the show could see your Jennifer's talk to a chef link. And
great.
That would be really great. That would be really helpful to give people some ideas. And what's a good place for people to start who want to experiment with some of the types of food that you're cooking right now? What's a good cookbook you can recommend, or a specific chef that you might mention that they could also look up?
I would suggest Roy Yamaguchi, any of Roy Yamaguchi's cookbooks are really wonderful. I have one specific one I reference a lot from his called Feast from Hawaii. Would recommend a cookbook or a chef, Alan Wong. And he has a cookbook called Blue Tomato, if I remember right. And
I like that title.
Yeah. And I think he named it after some kiddos who actually asked him if there was a blue tomato that existed. Like, why tomatoes are red? Why isn't there a blue tomato? It was really cute.
I've actually had a blue tomato. Well, not quite blue, more purple, but yes.
Yeah.
Nice.
And there's a new chef who is just come out with a cookbook as well. You might have seen him on Bravo TV, but his name is Chef Sheldon Simone, and he has a new cookbook out called, let me get the name real quick.
Sheldon Simone.
It's called, and it's called Cook Real Hawaii. And Sheldon Simone and Garrett Snyder. It's a beautiful cookbook.
Right. So it sounds like these are perfect Hawaiian sort of orientated cookbooks, which is really exciting because we like to experience new things. But and I've seen you do some those dishes for some of the kids in the food classes, but. We'll post those names. I got it down. I'll put them up on Food and Mania for people to reference. It sounds fun. I mean, you know what I mean? Take a little virtual trip to somebody else's kitchen. There's nothing like it. Well, I want to thank you so much for participating in the show. I hope I didn't put you on the spot too much, but you gave us some really great information. How can people reach you if they want to reach you? What would be the best way?
You can reach me at two different ways. You can reach me at my Instagram account, which is at Chef Jennifer Marie, or you can email direct me at chefjennifermarie6@gmail.com.
Okay, if you got that, that's great, because I'm sure you're gonna probably want to get. You'll probably get a couple of requests for sure, and maybe
Instagram is great.
Yeah, Instagram makes sense. Okay, good. I just wanted to put that in your hands to make sure that would be okay. But I'm really happy that people can reach you at Chef Jennifer Marie on an Instagram account,
yes,
which most of you people have out there. And you'll see also, because I looked at your account, some beautiful, incredible pictures as well, by the way. And just really inspiring. So thank you so much. I'm so happy that you were a guest today, and we'll look forward to the next time and look forward to announcements of things that might be happening, some of these networking ideas and some of these classes that are upcoming. And we're looking forward to hearing some feedback from you, Jennifer, and hopefully networking via the show with some brand new people that could further inspire your creativity, because I have to say that if you get a chance to eat any of Chef Jennifer's stuff, you'll be a lucky human being.
Oh.
You really will be. And then the second
part is
get some of those recipe-inspired change. You know, take somebody's recipe and you kind of put your 2 cents into it and increase taste in certain areas and this and that. And thank you for continuing to be one of our chefs out there who's experimenting and changing the course of how we're going to be cooking our food. So thanks again. All right.
Thank you
and we'll
so much.
Look forward to talking to you soon. All right, Jennifer.
All right.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. That was great. I'm really happy she made it to the show today. And fascinating stuff. Now, to see some of pictures of some of her food, you can look at the Blog Talk Radio slideshow, which is on the player. And then, like I said, reach out to her on Instagram. You'll be able to see some of the stuff. All right. We all want to thank you guys for celebrating part of your Valentine's Day with me today. It's been an interesting week on so many levels, and I can't really get into all that I want to talk about in the time we have left. I will be back tomorrow. It's the Monday show. Look for it tomorrow at 11 p.m. We'll have some new music, and we'll do some videoing, and we'll have a live Zoom connection, so you'll be able to actually look at some of the things that we're talking about, and that'll be fun. So look for that in your Foodomania link, and look for it in your Blog Talk Radio player as far as time in your area. It's 11 p.m. Pacific. Thank you for tuning in today. And that's it. Tomorrow's another day. Thanks for listening.
Keep on the sunny side.